everyone. Welcome back to TTT, the Talking Transport Transformation Podcast, brought to you by Tumi. Today, we would like to take you on a journey into the world of urban logistics. The trend of rising e-commerce, food and grocery deliveries started even before the COVID-19 pandemic hit. Urban dwellers around the world are today well used to trucks and vans adding to traffic jams or vehicle emissions when parked in second row. An emission-free alternative is offered by deliveries by bicycle, and they also don't take up so much of our road spaces. Additionally, instead of adding to congestion and being stuck in traffic, bike couriers circumnavigate bottlenecks and ensure fast and timely deliveries. That sounds quite cool. Yet, people working as bike couriers face quite some challenges when it comes to finding a decent working environment and livable salaries. The situation is often described as gig economy, a labor market that is characterized by the prevalence of short-term contracts and freelance work, facilitated by digital technologies such as delivery apps. This often fosters a difficult employment relationship too. Workers face limited rights and digital platforms can treat workers like employees, but without the cost of hiring, for example, and providing social security benefits. In today's episode, my colleague Viviane spoke to Jérôme Lühr from Crow Cycle Courier in Berlin. Crow Berlin is a bike courier cooperative founded in 2017 that offers car-free delivery services in and around Berlin. 15 to 20 cyclists are currently offering their services directly to a variety of different customers without having to take pay cuts by a booking platform or an app. In a current maximum capacity setup, a courier can take up to 250 kilograms of goods within one ride, and delivery times can be as fast as 30 minutes. That's pretty good. Also, Crow Berlin is set up as a collective. That means that it is fully owned by its cyclists. This setup allows the cooperative to better accommodate the cyclists' needs and create a decent working environment in the very competitive market of urban deliveries. But let's tune in and learn more about bike couriers serving our cities on two wheels.
Hello, Jérôme. Welcome to our podcast. Thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Vivian. Thank you for being here.
Personally, I'm very excited to chat with you about the world of urban logistics and the role of bike couriers today and the challenges they face. So, beginning our episode today, I suggest, how about you guide our listeners into the topic by telling us a bit about yourself and your journey and how you ended up founding Grow?
I would say I could start with the end of my first company that was working in a quite different field, more in the event logistics and event organization, and with the start of my first courier job, and that was 2015 at Deliveroo in Berlin. And Deliveroo, you might probably still know, they have vanished from the German market, but they are still active in various countries, is one of the first food delivery gig economy companies that has joined the European market. And what we have been doing there was the one thing that is pretty well known all around the world right now. People deliver food that has been ordered by an app and coming from partner restaurants all over the city. Starting this in 2015, was interesting in many ways. The beginnings have been quite good to earn money without many restraints or much of the watching eye over you, since everything was quite new. And looking for employment at the time, I joined Deliveroo in the office. So I got to know the startup and gig economy world from the inside for the first time of my life. And there I developed my role into operations and community management. So I was mainly responsible for the couriers, first in Berlin and then in Germany later on. And this went well for quite a long time until there was a feeling coming from the head company, from the corporate in London, that thumbscrews were started to get tightened. That meant that we could fulfill less of the nicer conditions and answers to the challenges that couriers have outside, and would be forced to save more money, to be more efficient, to be more lean, and so on. And this is where I started to... You've got a question.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned the challenges and the changes in sort of the working environment. Could we dig a bit deeper into those and what that meant for the bike couriers? What changed for them exactly?
Yes, of course. I mean, what you have to imagine is when you are a gig economy worker, then your basic working situation looks like this. You have your bike, you have your backpack, some equipment on you, and you have your smartphone with a running app. And you have, as opposed to the rest, you have no clue what's going on behind. So you are completely dependent on your app ringing, assigning you a job in order to do the job. You don't have much of an opportunity to say no to a job because it doesn't please you or it's too far away. You cannot go home and wait from there. So you have to find some space somewhere outside that is nice enough. Not the biggest challenge in summer, obviously, but the Berlin winter is long, dark and cold. So there are many challenges to come by with as a courier. And one of my roles in the office was to make these kind of conditions better and try and feel into the situation, which wasn't very hard for me to come by with since I knew the job already. But the challenges as a courier outside are very physical ones. And I think many people don't get that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I don't think many of us are aware of the working conditions. And when you just said, okay, bike courier basically just waits outside to be called upon, no matter which weather conditions are prevailing, I can only imagine how harsh that must have been. You also mentioned that, yeah, once you joined sort of the office work at Deliveroo, you try to improve working conditions. What kind of improvements were those?
There were ideas coming from many directions. First of all, I tried to establish like a direct communication line between the office and the couriers. So feedback comes from those who are directly affected by changes. And the challenges are almost anything that you could imagine. Anything that is technological, from how to make your phone survive, or what happens when you destroy your phone. So we organized cheap rental contracts where, when your phone is destroyed, you could get a new one and the old one gets repaired. Clothing tips. We started a sort of blog that was partly written by the couriers who were more experienced in order to provide and share knowledge with the younger couriers. We established a couple partnerships where you could get drinks or shelter that didn't work really well, but it at least worked for a while. So yeah, anything that happens about the individual being outside waiting for orders, what they could need was the challenge to come by with and try to establish improvements.
Thank you very much for sharing those insights. And I guess those ideas can serve hopefully as an inspiration for us working in the sector, but also our listeners working hopefully in similar fields. I'll sort of lead back to my first question I had to you and talking about how this path has basically led you to found Grow Berlin. How did that come about?
Yeah, good question, and directly connected to what we said previously. Since working conditions at Deliveroo started slowly changing into something that I couldn't support as an office worker anymore. I quit my job in the office and I changed back on the road and recognized that the work on the bike, on the road, is something very important for me as a person to equalize my moods and stress levels and so on. So I knew this is something that would follow me throughout my life. And I knew, or at least could kind of guess, that Deliveroo was slowly coming to an end. So I started meeting up with a couple of fellow food couriers and we started talking loosely, not much of a very clear idea, but we started talking about ideas and how we could probably maintain ourselves with this working environment, but being our own bosses. This went on for a year or so. Several meetings later, also quite big meetings with more people who were interested. In December 2017, we created Crow as a company.
I haven't really told our listeners what Crow exactly is and what type of service it is. Can you share that with us?
So first and foremost, the most important thing about Crow is that we work as a collective. So we do not have a typical hierarchy established, but want to keep it flat, even, and solidaric between the members. And starting out, we wanted to establish a courier service with a couple main values, so to say. The first and biggest one was that we absolutely and mandatorily wanted to stay car free, which we managed up until today. And secondly, we looked at the already established market in Berlin that is not small for bike courier services. And we knew that we needed something to stand out. So we started focusing on cargo bike deliveries. That being said, cargo bike deliveries could be many things, but we thought, okay, let's have a look at what typically is being done on a cargo bike at the time. We're talking about 2017, so it's quite a while ago, and since then many things have developed, especially in the cargo bike market. But at the time, it wasn't very typical to use cargo bikes to full capacity. And this is something that we started trying to do. And so we started out with the complete budget of 300 euros, one cargo bike that one of our founding partners had, and one customer.
Yeah, super interesting how sort of little you started off and where you ended up now. I'm curious to learn more about this way and the lessons you have learned along it, establishing a career business and the challenges you were facing and are still facing.
The way we established Crow was with the idea of this being an experiment firsthand. So we didn't know if we are able to establish and maintain a complete and fully operating company out of this. We wanted to try ourselves on standing on our own feet in the bike delivery business. And so the main aim in order to have this as an experiment that could also fail was that we do not owe anything to anybody. And so we started with said 300 euros and one cargo bike. Starting so small means that we wouldn't have much space for investments, development, renting a local, or any sort of bigger advertisement steps. So anything that we did in the beginning was extremely low budget. We looked for the cheapest domain we could get that we found for 1 euro for the first year. And many of these things. So we started very low budget and very lean and tried to develop us as a group socially and cooperatively as well as our service and how to make it professional on the way. And I think this takes a lot of energy and obviously a lot of unpaid time, because all of the meetings in the beginning, where should the money come from if you only have one customer with paid deliveries? So, yeah, instead of investing lots of money coming from various directions, we invested ourselves and time and energy. And this led to grow slowly but surely developing out of a shared office and into what it is today. And today, Crow is a stable and still car-free courier business with its own local. We have a bike shop that is one of the first steps of diversification, which was a first-hand idea in the first days, but at the time it was still a long way to go. And we stand shortly before renting another local with a storage space in order to start offering a fulfillment service as well.
You've come quite a good and long way since your founding days in 2017. And interesting to hear about diversification strategy. Now go looking at fulfillment. Can you explain to our listeners what fulfillment means and what type of service it is?
Basically, as you can imagine, a delivery or a courier service is a ad hoc kind of service. So people call you and you have to pick up from A and deliver to B. And if it's a little bit bigger, then to C and D. Fulfillment means you store any type of goods or documents or whatever for your customers, and you handle their stock. So we do the stock taking, we do the counting, we receive the goods from wholesalers or wherever it might come from, and we manage their whole stock up until the point of shipment. And the shipment is, again, our initial service, so we start doing the logistics from our own storage. And a customer only has to maintain their own administration, but not the full logistics from A to Z, more or less.
That would mean for you an additional stream of revenue you can generate to grow the business.
Exactly. What's important for us is that we establish real partnerships with our customers. We do not want like some sort of an anonymous, just business-to-business relationship. With most customers, we aim for close contact and some sort of business solidarity, if that could even exist. Like, let's say, having some humanity within the business. And this sort of fulfillment contract makes the partnership a bit closer, because the customer has everything that their value stands for in our storage. So there's a whole lot of trust towards us being able to manage this. And then at the same time, we have to trust this customer to keep on doing this and working so closely together with us.
Business solidarity. Yeah, I like the idea of that. And I obviously wish you good luck with that as well. Out of personal curiosity, who are your main customers? Like, not the names per se, but what kind of company can I imagine?
I would say pretty much anything that fits on a cargo bike. But the way we started out came more from the direction of coffee and wine, I think we could say. And our biggest fulfillment customer up to date, and also ongoing with the new storage, is a natural wine importer who trusted us in very early days, kind of gave us a sort of advance of trust, knowing that we are still struggling with a couple of things. And they were very happy to hear when we had our first local and would be able to establish a small storage room for them. And since then, this partnership has grown as well as both companies have grown. And yeah, now we are aiming to do this together with them. But then we work for a couple of coffee roasters. This is more like an ad hoc sort of business, but works really well. Coffee is a nice thing to be transported on a bike. But then you have lots of the typical things. We distribute clothing for a manufacturer to their stores. We transport documents, lots of camera equipment, and these kind of things. The varieties are pretty much never ending.
Thanks for the insights. A lesson or a message I'm definitely taking away here is that it takes brave and committed companies as well to change the industry and sort of support bike couriers in the setup of their businesses in their fight for sort of fairer working conditions, and that sort of companies themselves can make a change here as well. And by thinking about how they deliver their goods from A to B and who they trust and who they go into business relationships with. So yeah, thank you very much for those insights.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think what's really important about this is to know that the way we work, also from a political stance, also means that we do not just take any customer. We are really focusing on close partnerships, but then at the same time, we have one-off customers and so on. But it happens very often that that people kind of want to greenwash themselves with the service that you're offering. And if we get this kind of feeling that somebody tries to make like a sample delivery with us and take it this as like a photo date and spread this over social media, but we know that in the background everything happens by car and probably even diesel cars and so on, and they just use us in order to increase their sales and greenwash their service. If we get wind of that, then we will tell them off. Pretty likely.
Well, there's some really black sheep out there.
Greenwashing is a big thing.
Zooming out a bit from Grow as a company and the journey of your business into more the general context of urban logistics, something we have mentioned in our conversation already is the word gig economy. What do you make of it, and what relevance does it have for you and in sort of the ongoing discussion about the urban logistics and the bike courier sector?
I think what's really important to know about the gig economy is what the word means in itself. And because it sounds a little bit like it would be a concert, but it's really pretty much the opposite. The gig economy is based on the fact that you have like these single contracts being sent via an app to an individual in order to have them do this job in a very particular and closed environment. And the way this changes working relations is that people do not have a sort of vision for the day or like a general task load of how that they could prepare for. They never know what's going on. They don't know if it's going to be very busy or not busy at all. And most of the times they are rewarded for accomplishing more deliveries. But when there is not much work and they need the money, then they can't accomplish any deliveries. But when the weather turns really bad, probably there aren't any deliveries and the rewards are high to work on that, but the working conditions are getting really bad. So this moving away from general long-term vision of being employed and having some sort of self-trust in your working environment gets completely taken away. And your work is based on sometimes minute-long mini contracts. And these define your day. And I think this this way of never knowing what's happening next is something that keeps people down and doesn't offer them to develop into any sort of self-empowerment during the work.
And I also don't want to imagine what that means also for personal health in terms of the self-confidence, always knowing you're 100% dependent, your day becoming absolutely unpredictable, how much you will earn today or even less knowing tomorrow, must be very stressful and probably causing a lot of mental health issues as well.
And in addition to this, you have to imagine that you do not have any real personal contact to somebody giving you your job. And instead of a person providing the jobs, you just listen to an app that you cannot complain to, that you cannot discuss with, that you cannot propose any idea that you have to make your work better. You can't do anything. The only thing that you have to push is a couple buttons and go.
Yeah, thank you for highlighting this. So in today's world, what we often see as well is that technology being hyped and sort of featured as the solution, right? And if there's a problem, let's just create an app. Yeah, so thanks sharing sort of the human point of view onto this. So in our conversation so far, we have touched upon the careers, we've touched upon the roles of the companies and how they can do better. Let's talk a bit about, like, for example, me, the customers. What kind of expectations do you have towards us as the customers, as the individuals receiving deliveries every day in terms of food and general goods? Is there any wish list or even demands you would have towards us?
Oh, yes. And the list might actually be quite long, but I will try to keep it short. I think the most important thing is that people do not forget that when you open your door, the person coming up is a human just like you. And a sort of basic human solidarity is something that shouldn't be asked for, in my opinion, but is really not happening, especially in this field. The more people are platform-based or gig economy-based in their work, the more they are looked down at. This even happened to us back in the time when we started as food couriers, and even the normal bike couriers looked down at us. So you're really at the kind of end of the food chain, which is a weird analogy in this kind of world. But just like the sheer fact of having somebody come up to your door in order to bring you food doesn't make them any less than you. And so I think like there are a couple basic principles that you can always follow. One is, do open your door. Don't just let them stand in front of it or like type in the app something like, just leave it in front of the door, ciao, ciao. But like, say hello, you know, just make them feel being in contact with you. Secondly, if it's a shitty day and if it's like really bad weather, tip your courier. If you can afford an expensive delivery to your home door, then you can afford a euro or two of tip. It shouldn't be a problem. And cash tip is always the one preferred thing in any courier's life anyways. I think a third thing is to not stop thinking just because you use an app, but help people make their jobs easier. When your bell rings, tell them where you live, which floor, which building, how to get there. If it's complicated, tell them if there is an elevator, these kind of things. It's just very little gestures that you could perform in any situation at any day when you're in the S-Bahn or in a train or something. It's a very similar situation. You can also do it there. Just think for another person a little bit in order to receive this kind of service. And I think if you want to go a little bit farther and you're really interested, then it's always a good thing to ask people how happy they are with their jobs at the moment. And if there is anything that you as a customer currently could do in order to support them. If you look at current gig economy events in Berlin, for example, you have especially these like supermarket delivery companies that have emerged. And the working conditions there are as bad as they have been before in other companies. And couriers have created a sort of workers' union. Probably unofficial, but it exists. If you can learn about it, you could support this workers' union in order to help them better their working conditions. And this, as a customer, I think is actually, it should be part of your responsibility too, in order to receive this kind of service.
Thank you for sharing this wish list. I definitely took note and will certainly reflect upon sort of my next delivery. Maybe in contrast then to that, what you just said, let's zoom back in into your business setup as a collective and how that actually is very much a different business model to what you just described and what that looks like.
I think the most important difference is that we very early decided to work with an app just because we were also used to it. And in many ways, it kind of makes sense to just provide information and so on. But we do not solely work with the app. We also use radios to communicate with each other as people. And this sort of personal contact and the ability also to discuss around situations, probably even to unload your frustration sometimes or to make a joke, that makes you feel a little bit less alone out there. And it's something that feels where you have it's something where you feel supported in a different way and your whole working environment is changing because of that. And then coming back into your hub, does it mean that there is somebody telling you what to do next? But you decide together and you have your own voice on a plenary in our general assembly to vote on any kind of decision for directions the collective takes. And this kind of position as being the executive worker on one end, but also the CEO on the other hand, is something that brings together lots of wishes that I think should exist in the working world in general, but especially in the bike courier working environment, is something that brings a lot of empowerment, lots of opportunities actually to develop your self-trust.
Looking at the time, and yeah, it's been a very interesting discussion, and I do not want to stop, to be honest, but yeah, I would say we'd move over to the last question, which is leading a bit into a different direction. One of the topics we discuss a lot in our sector is the electrification and e-mobility in order to fulfill the Paris climate goals and in order to decarbonize our sector. What point of view do you have on that?
It's a very important point, and thank you for asking, because this is really, this will come out of my heart right now. I think one of the most important things that you also mentioned already is that we are always talking about decarbonizing our economy and our society. And in this short and little side-noted phrase is included that we are completely forgetting that decarbonization going together with electrification means exploitation and most likely on the other end of the world. And having mentioned that earlier, the word greenwashing is something really important for me. And I think it's super important that people pay attention to this and do not just think as long as there is a battery in there, it's sustainable. Of course, cars and motors and fossil fuels are something that we should get rid of. But getting rid of these kind of things comes with a price, and it's not always the first thing that you get sold that's the best solution. And the electrification coming together with the raw minerals and raw materials that are needed in order to build these batteries come with a very high price in regions where water is scarce, where working conditions are extremely bad. And I think too many people do not think about this, and they would just say, my next car is an e-car, and then I'm emission-free. And the only place where that is true is the place where you drive your car, but it doesn't mean that your car hasn't emitted a lot of actual polluting emissions, but also problems in other sectors. And this is why it's important for us also to keep our electrification levels as low as possible, which means all of our cargo bikes, we already don't have a car and we won't, but all of our cargo bikes are pedal powered. And we only have one trailer that is electrified just in order to get very high weights and volumes transported throughout the city. But here we make this kind of compromise, saying we only use the electrification when we really need it. And if it's not needed, it's not going to be used. And I think this should be the kind of vision on electrification, in order to not just greenwash everything and not be aware of the factors and results that it might have somewhere else. And I think it's always a good idea if also individuals just inform themselves before making a decision on these kind of subjects.
Yeah, thank you, Jerome, for sharing your view on the trend of electrification and the vision. I think that is very timely and very good to call out again, and also a reminder to all of us individuals what we can do. I'm very happy you came onto our podcast today and the conversation we had into all the different facets and all the different players. Thank you so much for sharing the insights, and yeah, I wish you and Crow all the best in your future endeavors, and hope that our paths will cross again.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity. Really good talk. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you for this insightful discussion, Jerome and Viviane, touching on all actors in the delivery chain. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and that you learned a lot about the challenges of providing sustainable and socially just deliveries. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time.